Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have KBCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Rita Coolidge, talking mainly about her CD, Safe in the Arms of Time. They do cover much more, of course. We'll hear about the CD and her time working with Leon Russell, Joe Cocker, Graham Nash, and many, many others. We're going to start the program with a modern gentleman who backed Frankie Valli for over a decade as the Four Seasons. Over the last several years, with Valli's blessing, they took the harmonies honed on stage with Valli and applied it to pop, classic rock, and more. I spoke with Brian Brigham, one of a few of the modern gentlemen who are from our region. Before becoming one of the Four Seasons, which then led to the Modern Gentleman, did you grow up, and I use this term lovingly, by the way, did you grow up a theater geek and have audition opportunities due to proximity? What I'm trying to do is hit that area that eventually led up to TV and film credits included, General Hospital, all that.
Yeah, I got the bug in high school. I did show choir. That's kind of where it led. And then I quickly, from there, went to a college music program and did musicals, did regional productions, national tours, and that sort of thing, and worked at theme parks in that arena. So it was a lot of musicals. So I'm definitely a theater geek.
Okay, gotcha. Myself as well. And so it's just one of those things you do. There's summer stock during certain times of the year, and then there's, okay, what do I do with the degree? And then, so there's that. I guess with that, some of these film credits you have listed, General Hospital, Boston Legal, and Jimmy Kimmel, etc. So with General Hospital, what'd you get? Did you have a role, or were you maybe third intern on the left, or a bit of both there?
I had what they call under five, so I did it about six times where you get under five lines that you could do, and I played an orderly in the mental ward. My name was Howard Billings.
Nice. That's really cool. Okay, excellent. Now, I won't really ask you William Shatner stories for Boston Legal, unless there are some really cool ones and you can just stop me right now. But you have performed with Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons since 2003, is that correct?
Yeah, that's when I first started the group.
First started or first brought it back? That's what I'm trying to sort out here. Frankie Valli being among the et ceteras as far as the rest of your credits. We are seeing the four of you as a group, but did the four of you come on board as the Four Seasons at the same time? They were starting it up again. Are you guys slowly replacing former Four Seasons?
Well, the first of the four of us was Todd Fournier. So he started in 2002. Frankie took a little break from performing for a while, brought the group back on tour again, and Todd was one of the first guys to come back with the group. And then this is way before Jersey Boys, so his popularity wasn't as big as it is now, of course. So
yeah.
A lot of guys would come and go because there was maybe one or two performances a month, which isn't enough to kind of sustain you with one job. So people would come and go, and then there was another audition late 2002, 2003, where my brother Landon, myself, and a few other gentlemen auditioned for the band. There was only two spots available at that time, so myself and Landon joined in 2003, and then soon after, one of our members in the group left to do something else. There was an opening for the first tenor role, and my brother, they knew him really well at that point, and we brought him into the fold, and we were the actual Four Seasons with Frankie the longest than anybody else in the group. So about 11, 12 years the four of us were together.
I think longer than the original Four Seasons.
Yeah, I think we are the longest tenured singers that he's had. And that's, you know, right when Jersey Boys started, we were the guys. We, you know, got to go on Broadway a couple of times, perform with symphony orchestras and travel and really get to see that resurgence of the group, which was really exciting for us.
Had you been a fan of this type of thing before starting to sing it, or was it, oh man, it's a job? But okay, now you like it. Okay, that's cool. But I'm looking at way back when.
Yeah, no, I mean, we all sing his songs. You know, I might not have known it was Frankie in the Four Seasons, but I knew the music. That was the first thing, because I was raised singing those things, and my brother and I always grew up singing harmony and that sort of thing. We sung in barbershop doo-wop groups growing up, so I always loved the vocal harmonies and things like that. So I was always listening to Four Freshmen and those awesome groups.
Time out there. Let me hear you make some noise. Come on.
December 1963, this is a song that, well, I have to say, for the longest time, I didn't know that Frankie wasn't singing the first couple of stanzas of it. Even the original recordings, I just always thought it was Frankie Valli, and then there were these other guys that were singing in the background. Had no idea the way that it has been and still is actually presented. But now it's tightly choreographed. I know you're coming out and clasping hands and doing the chest bump and all that kind of thing, and, you know, just, hey, it's good to be here kind of thing, but it is really a choreographed event nowadays, I think, more than maybe it used to be. There were incarnations of the Four Seasons before this current lineup that did very much this type of thing as well.
Yeah, when we got brought in, it was a different kind of setup, you know, where it went from the Four Seasons being musicians playing instruments to four younger seasons, if you will, that come in and kind of be more of a show where, this is before Jersey Boys, and they did all that, but we had a choreographer, and we were brought in to bring that youthful energy and sing all the background harmonies and do all the dance steps, and so we had a choreographer rather teach us all the steps and that sort of thing, and it's kind of how it formed.
Okay. You know, it's something that has clearly evolved over the years, but I was absolutely a child when the original version came out, and far from it now, but anyway, I've seen some changes over the years on that one. Some more background, really. I will actually talk about The Modern Gentleman coming up here, but I have to know, with the theater credits shared among the four of you, I'm not so curious if you were in the same productions together, although you and your brother wouldn't surprise me, but I'm curious if within the four of you we have a couple of Dannys from Greece or a couple of Judases singing in the same group these days.
Yeah, I definitely play Danny. You know, I had that role down. I couldn't escape the John Travolta roles. I played Danny in Greece. I did Tony Manero in Saturday Night Fever, the national tour. We actually played at the California Theater in San Bernardino, so that was a lot of fun.
You have other John Travolta roles ahead of you then, I would think, if you keep on doing that.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. He played Edna in Hairspray, so I don't know if I want to do that one.
No, don't. Okay.
Yeah.
Another side thing, and I think people would enjoy this, especially in this area. Again, amongst your credits, as an L.A. studio singer, I'd like to hear about, you know, maybe what's something that we could possibly have heard or still hear your voice on, even though we're not seeing you at all. You know, some car dealership, or find it at Staedtler Brothers, or that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes we get calls to sing with the orchestra for the movie. So we're singing on the score of the actual movie, and there'll be like a choir. And I really enjoy that, being brought in and singing. And it's all the oohs and ahs that you don't really pay attention to unless you're into that sort of thing. So I got to sing on some movie scores, which is a lot of fun, and also got to sing background on a lot of performances of American Idol and the house band and The Voice and America's Got Talent and all those shows. So it's fun to be in the background sometimes and be heard and not necessarily seen.
I would really think so. I think more so the behind-the-scenes stuff in the world of theater and even in radio. Well, radio, I'm kind of isolated in my own little booth here. You mentioned The Voice and America's Got Talent and all that kind of stuff. Were you on for a full season having to learn stylistic approach after all these hopefuls come on?
Yeah, so we would be, like American Idol, for example, I would sub in with the house band. So a friend of mine was singing with them and Dancing with the Stars, so he couldn't be two places at once. So he'd give me a call, and I did it for two seasons, kind of in the background, and I would learn kind of what the song was going to be for the taping the day before, and we'd rehearse with the contestants, and then sometimes we would be on camera. We'd be doing some choreography behind them, or sometimes, like I said earlier, we'd just be heard. And so it was a lot of different styles, of course, which is a lot of fun, and it keeps your chops up as a singer.
I have watched you on the shore, standing by the ocean's roar.
Well, at some point, you guys went from, you know, I don't want to say it's in past tense, because one would hope, knock on wood, there's Four Seasons gigs will continue. But at some point, you, as it says, finally tuned your signature sound to the iconic Frank Sinatra hits. And so this is where we're going from the Four Seasons to the Modern Gentleman lineup. So what is different with the Modern Gentleman lineup versus a Four Seasons lineup? I mean, beyond the fact, of course, one has Frankie Valli, the other one doesn't. But are you guys singing in a different register, maybe, than you normally would? Or do your harmonies come together in different ways from when you're with Valli?
Yeah, it's much different. So Frankie would hear us sing, and we would express our love for harmonies, and his favorite artist growing up was Sinatra. He always wanted to do a project with a group in his favorite groups, like the Four Freshmen and the High Lows, but do it as a tribute to Sinatra. So in the studio, he brought us in, and we recorded basically a whole album of Sinatra hits in the four-part harmony, and that's kind of what gave us our signature sound and singing all those close, tight-knit harmonies, which is very different from the Four Seasons rock and roll. So that's kind of how it started us as kind of a quartet and developed a sound within the four of us. And then we decided we should take this on the road and start touring and doing different things. And that's just one aspect of the show that we do. So in our show, we actually just do a very small portion of Four Seasons music in our show. We do a lot of Motown. We do a lot of jazz. We do Beach Boys, Bee Gees, anything that over the past five decades of favorite groups of ours, Stevie Wonder, we'll cover it within the four of us, which is something that we have a lot of fun doing.
That's the Modern Gentleman covering the Beach Boys, one of many sounds from the group. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we'll hear from Lillian Vasquez in conversation with singer Rita Coolidge. Her newest CD at the time of this conversation was Safe in the Arms of Time. First, though, back to Brian Brigham of the Modern Gentleman at Palette Resort and Casino, November 20th. More at themoderngentleman.net.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone to help.
It seems like you're looking for things that the audience will have fun hearing and seeing, but things that you guys will enjoy with your harmonies.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We knew that we had to branch out and even do like classic rock hits. So we'll do a big genre of music because we know our audience is growing and we want to continue doing what we love for many years to come.
Some of your fans, some of the folks that come to see your show, they may have started, well, when Sinatra did, but you're passing it on to other folks too, and I want to address that in a little bit. So it seems like this was Frankie Valli's idea or notion to put you guys together for all these Sinatra tunes. It wasn't you guys just loving the stuff, and it finally came together that way.
Well, it came from a love, obviously, from us, okay. And he saw that, but it was a project that he wanted to help us get off the ground, to help us with our career. And that's kind of where it did start. So there are 10 songs that are done. It just, you know, he has them kind of, you know, locked up there. And we're just, but that's how it started. And then we started moving on from there and taking it on our own. And then that's kind of how we created The Modern Gentleman.
Okay. But this one is available. I mean, people can get it these days, right? At the Modern Gentleman, is it .org or .net?
.net. TheModernGentleman.net. We do have a CD available. It's our volume one, kind of our favorite. It's not the Sinatra album, but it's the volume one, the kind of our favorite hits of Motown, Beach Boys, Beatles, and some Four Seasons, of course.
Fantastic. Okay. Does Frankie have any notion as to the release, or is it, you know, up to the producers, other producers at this point, but the release for the Sinatra stuff?
Well, we haven't talked about it in a while because we've been so busy doing our tour,
sure.
But, you know, he's never quite satisfied. He always wants to do something different or put a spin on it. And so, like, well, we gotta move on, but you let us know when you're ready, boss, you know.
Sweet. Yeah, well, you can't exactly demand it from him. Yeah. What was the first Sinatra tune or you know, older non-Four Seasons type of material that was, one, tossed around and sung for fun, maybe, and then two, recorded?
There's 10 songs that we recorded. There is Nancy with the Laughing Face, which was a really pretty arrangement that we had. The guy that actually did all the arrangements, his name is Artie Schreck. He originally arranged Can't Take My Eyes Off You for Frankie in 67. So that was really cool getting to work with him in the studio and his amazing arrangements. But there's so many good tunes, All the Way, Young at Heart, Come Fly With Me, Witchcraft, and a lot of like kind of not so popular songs of his that I really enjoyed getting to know and learn and sing.
Like what, for example? I mean, like Summer Wind or That's Life, or what's some of these?
Well, like we did this really cool a cappella version of In the Wee Small Hours. That's one of my favorite ones that we did.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm a huge jazz nut, and so really when I think of Sinatra, beyond so much of his work, I really go back to like the Count Basie Sinatra combination. So anyway, it's just great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hopefully, you know, even beyond this one waiting to be released, hopefully there will be other discs in the works. And so I'd be curious what maybe got passed up for this disc and then making sure that it's included for the next. Anything on the table?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I think there was a couple of those. You know, we wanted to do, like, you know, Night and Day, and there's a Lady the Tramp, a couple of those that we just thought would be fun. But, I mean, again, there's 10 songs that we had that were really cool, and we do some of them live.
One of the other gigs, I would say, that you were fortunate to get, you had your own residency in Atlantic City for a bit. And so, again, how did this come about, and what was it? Is it like a Vegas gig where you've got, you know, 6 nights a week, 2 times a day? How did this kind of thing work? And first of all, though, how did it come about for you?
We had an agent that kind of reached out to us and asked if we'd like to do a summer residency. So that just happened in August. We were there for the whole month.
Oh.
And it was a great experience getting to do your own, like, sit-down show for an entire month in the summer in Atlantic City. You know, it's very similar to the Vegas thing where there's all those casinos. And for most people that maybe have not been there, it's on the boardwalk. And you got all these really cool casinos and just iconic places that, you know, Sinatra's played and Frankie has played. And and so we were fortunate to do our own sit-down residency with the Modern Gentleman. And it was incredible. We had a live band, which a lot of people don't do there these days, but we had our own live band. It was fun getting to meet new people, new fans, and connect with them. So that was a really great experience for us.
It just absolutely had to have been. I wouldn't have thought that they'd be tracking people or, like, having people perform with tracks in Atlantic City, but that's the case, huh? Yeah, a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a lot of groups out there that, you know, they don't think about flying a band, and it can get, like, logistically is where it becomes, sometimes if you're really trying to make a name for yourself, it's all those things kind of add up. So you got to figure out, oh, do I know any musicians on the East Coast, or am I going to fly people in? And sometimes people choose to use tracks, professionally track shows. But in our show, we have so much energy, and we really feed off the live musicians that, you know, we'll work from everybody. If we can have a horn section, we'll have them up there. So we really love live music.
Phenomenal. Yeah, working with a live band, it's absolutely, well, there's the timing. There's the human timing element of it. So that's, again, incredible. Well, I'm really happy, wrapping up pretty quickly here, I'm really happy to hear that you're doing beyond the Sinatra stuff. You do throw in Four Seasons material, even when Frankie's not with you. I realize I just said Frankie's not with you as opposed to you're not with Frankie. I should really restate that.
Yeah, well, he gave us his blessing. You know, we talked to him, and it, you know, after almost 15 years individually and then together for 12 as a group, it was just time for us to move on, and he knew that, and, you know, he helps us. I still call him frequently and pick his brain and ask for advice. And, you know, the next thing for us now moving forward is to create some original music, and that's kind of where we've been lately in the studio, is kind of coming up with some ideas that we can reach the next generation and still have that classic, timeless feel to these songs where you can sing along, and the melodies are good, the stories are good, and that's kind of what's next for the Modern Gentleman.
I'm so glad to hear you mention that next generation kind of thing. And one with things like Pitch Perfect and the a cappella craze, I would have to say, that's out there. I read somewhere it's written that the four of you are fortunate to be curators of an amazing songbook, in essence. And curators as opposed to singers. That's really nice. And again, so much of your audience will be much older, but I'm sure they're... I'd love to hear about some time that you know that you really introduced this music to someone. A child or a high schooler, who knows what, but, you know, somebody beyond the years that someone would expect being a fan of Sinatra or Frankie mm-hmm. Valli.
Well, it's amazing. Sometimes, you know, you'll get the more mature people in the audience and they'll bring their grandchildren. But there's a lot of movies these days that are using those songs, and so they'll recognize it, and then they make the connection, and then they see it live, and they oh, I've seen it in this movie, or I've seen it on this TV show that I like, and then we do meet and greets after every show, so we meet the people, we like talking to the people, especially the younger people, and because we grew up as kids listening to this music, and it's, you know, 50, 60 years old, some of these songs, and we want it to continue another 15, 60 years. So that's why we look at ourselves as curators of the songbook. And I think we take a great responsibility doing so, because we were fortunate enough to work with Frankie, and we got to share the stage with the real Beach Boys and Manhattan Transfer, and kind of be that next generation that can bring it to the next group.
Fantastic. I couldn't have written a better rap. Music from The Modern Gentleman and conversation with Brian Brigham, 1/4 of The Modern Gentleman. Again, The Modern Gentleman will be at Palo Resort and Casino Friday, November 20th. More at themoderngentleman.net. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Let's go now to Lillian Vasquez in conversation with singer Rita Coolidge. Her newest CD at the time of this conversation was Safe in the Arms of Time, though we will hear about so much more.
My guest is Rita Coolidge, songwriter, singer. We're going to learn which comes first in just a minute. Welcome. It's such a privilege to speak with you.
Well, thank you, Lillian. Thank you for your time.
Over your career, you've worked with so many big names in the music industry. I'm only going to name a couple because the list is just too long and we don't have that much time. Joe Cocker, Eric Clapton, Leon Russell, Bob Dylan, Jimi Hendrix, Graham Nash, and of course, Kris Kristofferson. And you began as a backup singer. When did you go to the front of the stage? Can you give me a little bit of your background?
When I graduated from Florida State, I moved to Memphis, Tennessee, where my parents lived, and started working there as a session singer just because I met some people and started working for a company that did jingles and radio spots.
Okay.
And from there, I was able to earn a living during that time. And while I was deciding if I wanted to go back to graduate school or if I was really going to be a musician, I met Delaney and Bonnie Bramlett, who had come to Memphis to record their last commitment to Stax Records, and they invited me to go to California with them. So that really was the turning point for me, because up until that point, I had been offered an assistantship at Florida State in the art department, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. And I wanted to do music, and that just kind of gave me the message that, yeah, it's going to be okay.
In the introduction, I was saying, are you a singer-songwriter or a songwriter-singer? What came first for you?
Well, I sang before I talked, so okay. I'm pretty sure that's first.
You've written so many, right?
I'm not as prolific as, you know, someone like Keb Moe or obviously my favorite ex-husband, Kris Kristofferson, but I enjoy writing, and I enjoyed writing so much with my sister Priscilla before she was killed. After her death, I really kind of didn't want to write for a while, and I couldn't. I tried to write a song about her. I tried to write songs about other things, and I just had lost my soulmate.
Right.
And so being able to write with Keb Moe and Joe Colucci and Stan Lynch and Joe Hutto on this record really was just kind of coming out of a darkness that I didn't know if I would ever come out. So it was great.
Well, you certainly have, and we're going to talk about the song, but I need to make reference to what you just said, your favorite ex-husband. Why do you call him your favorite ex-husband? We're talking about Kris Kristofferson, of course.
Well, I've always called him that. from the day we divorced, I called him my favorite ex-husband because Chris and I were friends. We were best friends, and we always will be. So, you know, that friendship and that love of just the man, you know, he wasn't a great husband, but he sure is an amazing human being, and I just adore him.
Well, it's so nice that you can separate the two and still think of him as a great man and possibly a great father to your daughter.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why or where did the name Delta Lady come from, which was your 2016 memoir? Where did that come from?
It's a song that Leon Russell wrote about me after we broke up, and Joe Cocker recorded it and had a huge hit record with it.
Yes.
And since it was written about me, and on the Mad Dogs and Englishmen tour, that was the first time that I actually was given the handle Delta Lady, although everybody knew the song had been written about me. But on the album, everybody has their picture on the back and a little name underneath, and mine's Delta Lady, and it just stuck.
So I want to ask, I'm sure when you went on your book tour, you had a lot of questions from fans.
I didn't do an extensive book tour. I did some speaking engagements, but not an extensive tour.
So fans wouldn't have been able to ask you questions when they were getting your autograph? You didn't do that?
Usually when I did the book tour, it would be in a bookstore, or I did a librarians convention in Texas, and I did, you know, some book fairs, and I would get up and do a talk, and then I would have a question and answer period.
What was the question that would always, that you've been answering for 50 years? What question is it that always comes up?
I can't think of one.
No?
Do you have one?
Well, yeah, but I would ask you about your music in the 70s because that's my genre and my generation of Higher and Higher,
well,
you know. So
that, yeah, that's a pretty broad question, and probably that's what the book answered. That's why I wrote the book, because over the years, people have asked me about my role in the music scene in the late 60s and 70s. And, you know, that really was my motivation to write the book, because I really was in a great position and I had a great view of what was going on, you know, in the music scene in Memphis and in California, and being on the road with Mad Dogs and Englishmen and Eric Clapton and Delaney and Bonnie. You know, I just was around for a lot of really cool stuff. Being in the studio in Los Angeles or New York, wherever I was recording, you know, there were just always great people that were around. I would go to great sessions, you know, go into a Jimmy Buffett session, and Harrison Ford would be there. It was just a cool place.
My guest is Rita Coolidge. Well, I think it's great that you wrote it so those of us that do have questions can read that book, and I recommend that our listeners read it if they want to learn more about you and your world and the music world overall. You've been nicknamed, or your association with hummingbirds. Do you get a lot of gifts from people, from your fans, that are hummingbirds?
Yes. I do. I just moved from California to Tallahassee, Florida, and I have one enormous storage chest that's just full of hummingbird memorabilia. And, you know, the people give it to me, and they say, well, if you don't want it, give it to your granddaughters. And my granddaughters probably don't want it either. But it's just what happens. I remember one of my other sister, Linda, who is still living, for a while thought that she would collect pigs because she always liked pigs. And at some point, she just had to send out a memo to the whole family, no more pigs.
Yeah.
So hummingbirds are absolutely adorable and beautiful, and I love them so much. And I like them most in their natural form outside, flying around my windows. That's the joy.
And what's the tie-in? Why hummingbirds?
Well, because when I was a child, I was a skinny little, just a little busybody all over the place. And my sister called me the Hummer, my older sister, which was short for hummingbird. And she called me the Hummer until she passed. So translated into Cherokee, the word for hummingbird in Cherokee is Walela, which was the name of our Native American group.
Yes. When are you happiest? On stage, writing, with family, performing? When are you happiest?
I'm happiest when I'm actually playing music. More and more, I just have the hardest time with all the travel and the packing and sound checks and trying to find food and getting up at the crack of dawn, and the schedule that goes on around it has, you know, is becoming something that I don't love. But I love playing music, but I'm actually happiest when I'm at home with my future husband and we're just sitting outside on the sun porch watching the foxes and the squirrels and just all the wildlife in our yard, and it's just beautiful, and that's when I'm totally happy.
Great. Thank you for sharing that.
That's KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with singer Rita Coolidge. Just ahead, music from the most recent CD at the time of this conversation and her friendship and collaboration with Graham Nash. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Let's go now back to Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Rita Coolidge with her new at the time CD, Safe in the Arms of Time. We'll hear about several songs from the disc and the collaboration and friendship of a well-known name.
There's so much in your world, and Graham Nash played a part in your early years and kind of come full circle in your later years. Did he collaborate a little bit in this CD?
Well, Graham and I have remained friends all these years. We've stayed in touch. He's just one of the loveliest people that I've known in my life. So, you know, why would I want to lose that? He's just a great guy. You know, after Chris and I married and Graham married his first and only wife, they're divorced now, but you know, we remained friends and would run into each other, you know, at events. And, of course, when my sister passed, Graham canceled everything that he had. He had a tour and dates in Hawaii, canceled everything and came to Los Angeles for my sister's memorial, which just tells me volumes about who he is. So Graham sent me a song about 3 years ago via email called Doing Fine Without You. And at that time, I was really trying to find the songs that, you know, that represented the kind of record I wanted to make. And when I got that song from Graham, I called him and said, I absolutely, because he just said, what do you think about this song? And so I called him and said, I just love this song, and I really want to record it on the new record. It's setting the pace for this record, and can you put it on hold? And he said, absolutely. I wouldn't think of doing anything else with it. And I'm sure he could have placed that song with Bonnie Raitt or a number of other people, but he didn't. He held on to it for me. So, again, he's just been such a good friend. And, you know, we see each other. I saw him and his lady in New York in May, and we went to the theater one night. We had dinner another night, and it's just great to have those lifelong friendships. I'm friends with his sister, and we stay in touch. He's just always been like family.
Can I just say he's aged beautifully?
Do you know what? He's absolutely gorgeous. And the night that we were meeting at the theater, and I was with some other friends, and he was with his lady, and as we're walking toward the theater, you know, everybody said, do you see Graham? And I said, of course I do. It's that mop of white hair.
Yes.
Right there. There's nobody else. It could be no one else.
Life is a winding road, bends and bridges, twists and turns. Time is a match in your fingertips. Strike it up and watch it burn. Once we found our shelter in the arms of the moonlight glow. Too many walks on fences, too many I don't knows. And I wish you peace on the wings of love. anything that you try. I hope you find the answers to the questions in your heart. May you be satisfied.
Some of the songs that stuck out to me that I wanted to ask you about was Satisfied.
Satisfied was written by David Grissom, who is the tracking guitarist, and he did some of the brilliant solos on the record. And it was written by David Grissom and Chris Stapleton. And when David played the song for me, it brought tears to my eyes because it's a song that I would have sung for my sisters. I would sing it for my children. I would sing it for any of my family members because it's just something you want to say to people that you love. I wish you peace on the wings of love. But the lyrics and the chorus to me are just the perfect poetry.
Let me ask you about the song, Walking on Water.
I wrote that with Keb Moe and Jill Colucci. And when I went to Nashville to write with Keb Moe, and specifically with Keb, and then Jill ended up coming on the writing date with us, we sat and talked the first day before we ever thought about what we were going to write.
I'm always searching for answers, down here reaching for the stars. The only truth that I've ever found is for me there's no such thing as solid ground. I'm walking on water, floating on air. What lies beneath me is really not there.
We were just talking to each other, and I had met Kevin so many times, but had never been in an intimate writing situation. And writing with another person, it becomes a form of real intimacy because you pour out your heart and soul.
I bet.
Well, you know, when you're trying to find the right lyrics, and you have to express a whole world of feelings to find that one word that says what you need. And so we were all expressing just kind of our spiritual values. And I knew that Keb Moe had practiced Buddhism in the past. There's a woman out of Nova Scotia, her name is Pema Chodron, who is a Buddhist monk that I have read extensively. I've read her books and listened to her tapes because they're just great life lessons and life teachings. And I had asked Kevin if he knew of her, and he said, well, I don't think I've ever read anything. I've heard of her. And I said, well, she talks about how, you know, we always feel like we're on solid ground, but actually we are made of water, and we're basically walking on water. The ground is no more firm than that beneath us. And we talked about it for a while, and then we wrote Naked All Night, which was the other song that I wrote with Kevin Jill. And we got that demoed that night, and we went back in the next day for our second day of writing, and Kevin came down that morning, and he said, you know, I've been thinking all night about what you said about walking on water. He said, let's write that one. And that's how that one came about. And, you know, for me, that song resonates so much right now because, you know, the lyrics and the verse that say there's no such thing as the truth, which seems to be happening, you know, at the top of our country, the office of the president, who just doesn't seem to know what the truth is. And it doesn't seem to matter to anybody anymore. That resonates with me.
You pour your heart out on the page. You bear your soul up on the stage. You got the power to make us feel. You got the power to help us heal.
What was the inspiration for the song Van Gogh?
It's written by a Nashville writer, Tom Douglas. When we were looking for songs, we just kept getting to the publishing companies in Nashville and New York and Los Angeles, and we were not getting what we call the A-list songs. We were just getting songs that were 10 years old by somebody who had maybe recently had a hit, and they weren't great songs. And so I went to my friend Stan Lynch, who's a former drummer of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and writes extensively with Don Henley for his records. got in touch with Stan and said, how do we get the songs? You're an A-list songwriter. How do we get them? And he said, you may not get them from the publishers, but I can tell you some guys that are writing songs. And he steered us to these two guys in Nashville, Tom Douglas and Gordon Kennedy. And between those two, there were two songs each from those guys on the record, and Van Gogh is one of those songs. And the first time I heard it, I was sitting with my producer as we were going through these songs, because we finally got good songs. And we listened to that for the first time together, and when we finished, we had our heads down listening, and when we looked at each other, we both had tears in our eyes and just said, I'm pretty sure we're going to cut this one, aren't we? And he said, yeah, we're doing this one. Because I was an art major, and I've been to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam and have always just loved Van Gogh's work. It just resonated so much with me.
Last song that I want to ask about is Please Grow Old With Me.
Well, that's written by Stan Lynch, who wrote You Could Fall in Love With Me and my guy, Joe Hutto. And when I first heard that song, he had sent it to my producer, Ross Hogarth, just one Sunday afternoon. I think Stan came home from church with his wife, and he said he just walked in the house and just wanted to see if he could write a love song that sounded like a hymnal. And so he wrote this song. He just sat down and wrote it probably in an hour or two and sent it to us. Of course, the first time I heard that, it just reminded me of my parents. You know, it's a life that I wish I had had with someone. But I'm too old. I'm not too old to grow old. I just already am. So, but I can grow. This would be Please Grow Older with me.
I'm laughing with Rita Coolidge, and we're talking about her newest CD, Safe in the Arms of Time. Can you give me the backstory of how the CD came about? Why you decided to do it? Why now was the time?
I think that, you know, hindsight has kind of told me this, because when somebody first asked me the question, you know, after the album was done, you know, did your book influence doing this record? And at first I said no. And as I thought about it, I have kind of reconsidered that probably while I was writing the book, although not consciously, I was kind of going through, you know, just revisiting the past and revisiting some of the earlier records. And I just sat down and started playing some of the earlier records and some of my favorite cuts, and just recognized that there was something. It was not just being 20-something. It was something about the songs that were chosen and the way we interpreted them musically. And it was just kind of rootsy and organic, and I just really wanted to be able to capture that, because I think that the longer I recorded and the more suggestions that I would get from record companies, they wanted things that were like movie themes, and they got so far away from that just kind of almost folky sound, you know, into these glistening pop records. And I just wanted to be able to make a record that the songs maybe resonated like 70s songs, but with a more modern interpretation of organic, rootsy music. And, you know, a lot of that comes from the musicians, of course, the choice of songs, and just how we executed everything, and just how tight the band was, and how we communicated when we were recording. And, you know, as it turns out, it's exactly what I wanted to do. And I couldn't have done it without my producer, Ross Hogarth, sharing that vision. He understood when I talked to him when we first met what I wanted to accomplish. And he just said, I think it's wonderful, and we're going to do it. And we did.
That's terrific. You still perform on stage? Are you at a concert and you still have to perform certain songs, or that your audience will expect? I'm sure you'll be playing music from Safe in the Arms of Time, but are there songs that your audience expects of you and you?
Absolutely. You know, it would be wrong of me to not do those songs, because that's why people come. You know, they have carried me into 48 years of being in the business, because people have been loyal to those songs. And so I joyfully sing those songs every concert.
And what songs,
you know,
would those
James
be?
James Taylor said when I recorded You Got a Friend, he said, I didn't know I was going to do it. Be doing it every concert for the rest of my life. And that's kind of the way, Higher and Higher and We're All Alone. And some of those songs are, but I enjoy doing them.
All Time High, I would imagine, would be on that list as well.
No, it's actually not.
Really?
I don't. It's not, because when I recorded that song, and I was honored to have been chosen to do a James Bond theme song, but when I got to the studio that day, and I had been sent the music, but Tim Rice had not finished writing the lyrics, and he's sitting in the floor and, you know, scrambling out lyrics so I can go in the room and record the song, and I just felt ultimately that just about every song that is in my show is just a better written song. You know, I just felt that he fell short with the lyrics. I'm sure many people would disagree, but it just doesn't fit in my show. I don't understand that. That's the one that I don't do very often. I think the last time I did it was the 50th anniversary of
the movie,
James Bond film.
Sure.
Yeah.
And lastly, this new CD, you thank a lot of people, of course, on the cover, but it's dedicated to your sister. How are you doing now?
You know, I carry her with me every day of my life, and I always will. But I think, you know, that recording this album, she was in my heart and on my shoulder the whole time. You know, it's part of life. It's, you know, it's a process of losing people that we love and going on, because that's what she would want. She wouldn't want my life to stop being wonderful and happy because she's not here. So, you know, I try to be as happy as I can, and I'm very happy, and I miss her. I will always miss my sister, but, you know, life is impermanent.
Rita Coolidge, thank you so much for your time and sharing more about your CD and your world in music. I so appreciate it.
Thank you, Lillian. It's been great talking to you.
That was Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Rita Coolidge. Her newest CD at the time of this interview was Safely in the Arms of Time. More at ritacoolidge.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Rita Coolidge, as well as to Brian Brigham of The Modern Gentleman. Again, The Modern Gentleman will be at Pala Resort and Casino Friday, November 20th. More at themoderngentleman.net. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sharina Wadd, and Andrew Caravella. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.